Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's January the 25th, 2006. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. And later this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. Dave Dickey will be along in just a moment with all the day's agricultural news, including an update on beef trade with Japan. We'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City just after the bottom of the hour, and along the way we'll hear about Annie's project. Did you know there are more women landowners in the state of Illinois than men? Annie's project is designed to help those women adapt to the business of the farm. It all happens on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
In Chicago, on this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished like this. The nearby March contract in the wheat pit at 342, up 9.5 cents. May futures at 352 and three quarters were up 9.5 as well. Kansas City wheat traded the March contract at 391 at the end of the day. It was up 5.5 cents. Chicago corn March contract 216.5, up 3.25. May futures at 226, up 2.75. And July contract at 235, up 3 cents. September corn futures 242.25. They finished 2.5 cents higher for the day. Soy complex now. March soybeans off 4.25 today at 567. The May futures at 578. They were down 3. July at 588.5, down 3. And November beans at $6.5 were down 1.75. Bean meal March contract off $1.50 at 178.40. Bean oil March contract 21.52, unchanged on the day. January feeder cattle at the Mercantile Exchange up 17.5 cents, 113.32.5. Live cattle February contract 94.90. They were off $0.05, and the lean hogs finished the Feb contract at 57.35. They were down 42.5 cents today.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd. Nice to talk to you on this wonderful, beautiful Wednesday afternoon.
It is a good afternoon. Hey, I've got something I want to read very quickly. This is off the wire services from Chicago and Reuters. They're talking about what's been happening in the corn and the wheat pits, and it seems that Deutsche Bank last week launched what it called the DB Commodity Index Tracking Fund. It's the first commodity index linked fund to be listed on a U.S. stock exchange. It's on the American Stocks Exchange under the category of Amex DBC, and that's been buying wheat, corn, crude oil, heating oil, gold, and aluminum. Those are the products that it tracks, but it's been buying wheat and corn at a fairly good pace over the last couple of days. Can you tell me more about that and what you've heard maybe on the squawk boxes?
Well, you know, this concept has been used in trading like the Dow Jones Industrial Average, called diamonds, and like you can buy 100 shares of equivalency of the Dow Jones futures. I mean the Dow Jones average of so many shares based on the index, and these banks, because they're in the commodity business, just like handling stocks and bonds, and also loaning money and handling your personal checks, are delving into these hybrid deals with the stock market, basically hybridization of commodities of so many dollars. And it's interesting that the corn and wheat market was higher in soybeans, and its equivalency about 10,000 contracts on this number of shares that they're basically using to equate this. It's a portfolio or basket of commodities, which is not an unusual deal, and they obviously have spent a little time with the corn and wheat issue, as well as the heating oil and crude oil and the aluminum. So it's weighted to give it a little more energy with the energy complex. It's also can be construed as inflationary with the idea that that the futures market sometimes mirrors inflation. So it's a new concept. We have to be big players at the Board of Trade and in the commodity business and welcome this new business. And hopefully it takes hold because it's another avenue for these large money center banks to make a dollar.
Does it mean that the increase, and I know it's real, but the increase in the price of wheat and corn is real and can be sustained into the springtime?
Well, my interpretation is that the wheat and corn trend is higher. And there are fundamental reasons to base that on. And it started, you know, we do know the carryovers on both are very large, particularly corn.
Mm-hmm.
And the Informa group indicated a smaller corn acreage. As a result of that, we also, you know, understand that the wheat acreage was also up about 2.3% when it was all said and done. I guess, Todd, fundamentals are justifying it, in particularly with the dryness west of the Mississippi, super cold temperatures in Russia and Europe, and there is some pockets of dryness in Argentina. The private weather people did up the rainfall event in the 10 to 14-day forecast at the noon hour. My general impression is that people can in this business can lose a lot of sleep if you don't realize that we have a corn pit, a wheat pit, and a soybean pit, and they both can go in different and opposite directions, and that's what we saw today with the corn and wheat being higher and soybeans being lower. Fundamentals did also have an effect on the soybean market as well.
Let's talk about that soy complex. And Dave and I noted on the charts that this is the second day that they've traded higher on a higher, lower, low, and then finish lower. That's technically an outside down day for a couple of days in a row. I think that happened in both the March and the November contracts. But nevertheless, it moved pretty good today to the upside and then just fell off at the end of the trade today. What happened?
Well, it was a couple things. You know, this idea that the private weather people had put more rainfall in a forecast for Argentina, and the growing conditions in South America seem to be good to excellent. And I want to bore you to death with this one. The 2004 carryover in soybeans was $256 million. The carryover by the USDA for this year, 2005, was $505. The Informa group say it's close to 600 million bushels, and 2006 and 7 production, 681 million bushel carryover. So what we're basically looking at is an enormous production and estimates of carryover in soybeans, as well as more planted acres in the future. And as a result of this, if we do have any kind of a normal weather forecast, the fundamentals are just screaming bearishness all over the place in the soybean complex. The trend is still officially down there, and of course, we all know that the soybean plant can withstand dry weather a little better than the corn plant as far as production is concerned.
Paul, given all of this, are you, when you look at the energy complex, and we talk about, I think there are, 95 ethanol plants online or something like that today, are you of the mind that the price of beans has to go down and the price of corn needs to go up in order to buy those acres back into the
No, corn? I think that is something where I would give a student an F if he wrote it on a term paper or a final quiz. And I tell you that one of the things that we are seeing is that another big player in this complex is sugar is being turned into ethanol in the Caribbean and mm-hmm. also in Brazil. It is a big growth business. We understand that the Japanese and Chinese are also buying ethanol out of South America. So what we're seeing is the flat price sugar prices have gone up, exploded. It's made certain corn sweetener industries, you know, their stocks are reflecting better prices and better earnings. And so it is a big energy issue, and I think the energy issue is one of the major driving forces in agriculture, both on cost of production as well as earning power by these grain companies.
You've said of recent that the trend is your friend, the trend upward in corn, you said already today, trend downward or neutral in the beans?
You'd have to say so. And in one of the things that I think in order to be a really successful trader is that you have to share and follow the trend and don't think too much about why one's going up and why the other one's going down. And I think that you really have to basically at this time of year go more over to a technical trend and follow the technicals instead of worrying about the fundamentals, because you'll lose a lot of sleep, I think.
And then what are you advising producers about cash sales for new crop?
Well, you know, definitely there's been a lot of corn and soybeans sold already. One of the things that we see today is that we did start to see some scale-up selling in the corn market, you know, orders at 52, which were filled, 54, 56, 58, and 60. So we are seeing a group of selling. The trouble is that you are selling in a rally, and the trend is up. So traders beware, the trend is down in the beans, so that's the salvation for being bearish the soybean market and bullish the corn market.
And then what do you make of what's been happening in the mercantile exchange and the Japanese row in South Korea? And well,
of course, if we'd have tested every calf that was slaughtered a year and a half to 2 years ago, we'd still be selling beef, I think, to the Japanese and the world. It's an unfortunate situation. The president and the secretary of agriculture are going to work very hard on it. And, you know, we have to give them their complete support. And, you know, it's an unfortunate situation that happened. And we hope that diplomacy works and it works quick.
Now, for the record, I'm glad I didn't write down that the ethanol was going to push farmer corn prices higher and that it was going to buy acres back. I didn't want an F from you.
I tell you what, I always like talking to you, and you can understand grades being from an academic community.
You bet. I wasn't too particularly worried about it. Thanks, Paul.
Have a good one.
Today. You too. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services. He's out of Oakland, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens on Wednesday afternoons.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Bob Bezdefer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
By the way, if you want to hear more about what Paul Cooley has to say, you can do that in person tomorrow night along with several other analysts. Dave Dickey will be out at the Vermilion County Farm Bureau building there in Danville, Illinois. Starts at 7. Stay with us. We'll tell you more about that a little later in this program. At the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City will join us for a look at the agricultural weather. AM 580's own Mike Sola forecast for tonight across the two-state region. Calls for mostly clear skies. Lows this evening, he says, will range from 18 in the north to 26 in the far south. Those sound like winter temperatures, don't they? Tomorrow, mostly sunny. Highs will range from 38 in northeastern Indiana to 54. In southwestern Illinois. The extended forecast, Friday partly sunny skies, Saturday mostly cloudy, some scattered showers developing, Sunday cloudy, some scattered snow showers in the north, light rain in the central and southern sections. Friday and Saturday, the highs will range from the 40s to the 50s. In just a moment, Dave Dickey will be here with a look at today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, USDA Secretary Mike Johanns told a gathering of meat industry representatives yesterday that they must work together with government officials to regain Japan's trust so that beef trade can resume. Japan halted imports of U.S. beef Friday after discovering prohibited spinal column in a shipment of veal shipped by Atlantic Veal and Lamb, a New York company. Johanns says there's plenty of blame to share.
We believe the ineligible product was transmitted to Japan due to human error. A failure on the part of the exporter and on the part of USDA personnel to identify the product as being ineligible. The details of our export agreements are clearly and meticulously explained, and it is incumbent upon you and our inspection and verification personnel to ensure that we meet the requirements of our export agreements, all of our export agreements.
A federal inspector who has not been identified signed off on the shipment. Johans says a violation is unacceptable.
This is an unacceptable failure on our part to meet the requirements of an agreement that we negotiated with Japan. Ensuring compliance with all trade agreements will require diligence and absolute attention to detail on your part and on the part of our personnel. Billions of dollars of trade literally hang in the balance on these issues.
USDA has halted approving additional U.S. companies for export to Japan, and Atlantic Veal and Lamb had its Japanese export license revoked. Japan gave no indication today of when U.S. shipments might resume, but did agree to continue efforts to prevent a reoccurrence. U.S. and Japanese officials met for 3 hours yesterday. Japanese officials say the meeting failed to put to rest concerns about the reliability of the U.S. food safety system. After the meeting, the head of Japan's Agriculture, Forestry, and Fisheries Ministry's Food Safety and Consumer Affairs Bureau, Hiroshi Nakagawa, says he regrets how the incident has, in his words, considerably shaken consumers' trust. Japan is also annoyed at remarks made by U.S. Undersecretary J.B. Penn, who downplayed the risk of mad cow disease. Penn told reporters, and this is a quote, "Getting out of your automobile and walking into the store to buy beef has a higher probability that you'll be hit by an automobile than the probability of any harm coming to you from eating beef." Tuesday, Japan confirmed its 22nd case of BSE. In other mad cow news, South Korea has decided to delay a working group meeting with Canada to resume Canadian imports after Canada discovered its fourth case of BSE. And Taiwan today says it's lifting its ban on U.S. beef. It will take meat from cattle 30 months and younger with specified risk materials removed. And the chairman of the House Ag Committee sent signals yesterday that the World Trade Organization talks may have little impact on the crafting of the 2007 Farm Bill. Virginia Republican Bob Goodlatte.
I am dubious that the Europeans and some other major trading partners of ours, the Japanese, for example, are going to be open-minded enough about trade for us to come up with an agreement that would be acceptable to us, that would be able to pass the Congress.
Goodlatte says lawmakers, therefore, have to look at U.S. interests in promoting America's farmers and ranchers. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, inviting you to join Dave for another one of WILL's Ag Outlook panels. This one will be at the Vermilion County Farm Bureau office in Danville tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. It's free. Kurt Kimmel, Clayton Polk, Dan Zwicker, Paul Cooley, all names you should be familiar with from our on-air service here at WILL will be at the Vermilion County Farm Bureau building tomorrow night at 7 o'clock in Danville, Illinois, for a WILL Ag Outlook meeting. It's absolutely free. We hope you will join them that night. Well, up next, we already know the average age of the American farmer is 55. That number, of course, comes from the Ag Census of 2002. This figure relates to our next story on farm women and a program called Annie's Project. As you'll hear, there are far more women landowners today than ever before, and University of Illinois Extension has developed a program to help them manage their property. There are two stats that make you sit up and take notice of Annie's Project. The number of women farm operators grew faster from 1997 to 2002 than any other agricultural census data. The other is more impressive. Women own more farmland in the state of Illinois than men. says University of Illinois Extension educator Ruth Hambleton.
And they get that way by virtue of, number one, their partners in businesses, and then their husbands tend to die before they do. So as a whole, women landowners outnumber the male landowners in the state.
Sometimes these women, whether they are partners or widowed landowners, struggle with the business side of agriculture.
There's many things they struggle with, but one big one that they struggle with is just trying to get a grasp of everything that's going on in that operation. They didn't live the day-to-day of the operation. They were aware of it, and now that their spouse is out of the picture, they suddenly find that they have to deal with lenders. They're the ones who have to buy the inputs for the farm operation. They're the ones who have to make the decision of when to market livestock and when to market crops. And there's just a lot to it that they weren't, you know, paying attention to the detail at the time, and suddenly they find themselves in charge.
These struggles are part of the reason Ruth Hambleton, a farm girl, came up with an extension program she named Annie's Project, after her mother. The Annie's Project curriculum introduces farm women to business management techniques.
So we would learn about balance sheets, income statements. We'd learn about cash flows. We'd take them through what it is lenders would be looking at, what kind of paper and documentation would a lender need to have someone pull together. We talk about business plans, spreadsheets, so they can learn how to organize and keep important records organized, so when it's time to pull that information back out, they are able to do it quickly and with knowledge of where everything is.
While Annie's Project originated in Illinois, the coursework, which consists of 6 sessions, is widely available throughout the Midwest. Contact your local extension office for more information, or simply search the web for Annie's Project. You'll find an Annie's Project homepage, contact information, and a list of upcoming classes. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
We're joined now by Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana, to take a look at the cash grain market. Good afternoon to you, Kay.
Good afternoon to you, Todd.
What'd you make of the trade in Chicago to begin with?
It was a wild today, and, you know, the farmer was a big seller when we had that rally 3 weeks or so ago, and he was another big seller into the market today. No beans. I bought very few beans, but he took advantage of the corn, $2 flat price cash corn, and new crop getting back to where we were. It really brought a lot of sales, and our people in Omaha tell us that every elevator in the region was the same way today.
I would guess that the most often asked question you had today is how much higher for corn?
That's exactly what everybody is asking, is how much higher. And, you know, the thing about it is a fundamental market is a lot easier to judge than a technical one, and it's just really kind of hard to say. But we saw some pressure on the end, so we could see it lower in the morning. There's no doubt about that.
You worried about the bean market?
Oh, absolutely. I've been very bearish beans all along and begged, pleaded, cajoled, and everything I could do to get some of these producers to sell some of their old crop at $6 as well as new crop. Got a lot of it done, but there's a lot of it out there yet to sell. And, no, things look very, very bearish in beans.
And on your nightly phone, are you still telling them to sell both crops for new crop?
Well, you know, if we get a little rally back on this new crop beans, I'm hoping that we could do better than where we are today. But absolutely, I still say that beans need to be sold if we get a decent rally. If we, of course, here again, everybody's talking drought, La Nina, all that stuff. That could change things. But if Mr. Sparks or his informant is anywhere near right, we have a lot of bean acres, you're going to see beans below loan rate this fall.
And what are your bids for the day?
Cash corn today is $1.99, and cash beans today are $5.47.
We appreciate it much.
Thank you.
Kay Whitlock is with Terre Haute Grain out of Terre Haute, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Wednesday afternoons. In about 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast with Drew Lerner. And we'll discuss Brazil and Argentina and what's been happening in Texas and the dry areas of this nation. Your local newscast comes up right now.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. Governor Rob Blagojevich says he did not withdraw his plan to legalize Keno because Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan had determined that it required legislative approval. At a veterans center in Chicago today, the governor said he always would have preferred that his plan get the approval of state lawmakers. Now he's challenging Illinois Republicans to decide whether they support his state construction plan, which he says will create 230,000 jobs without the Keno proposal. Republican candidates for Governor Jim Oberweis and Bill Brady took pot shots at Governor Blagojevich during a debate today in Chicago, both pledging they are the candidate that can beat him. Brady and Oberweis were the only two GOP hopefuls at the debate put on by the City Club of Chicago. Those two, plus two other Republican candidates, are expected at another debate tonight in Naperville. Former New Orleans Mayor Marc Morial says the people of New Orleans are survivors, but the government response plans meant to help them after Hurricane Katrina have fallen short. Morial said on WILL's Focus 580 this morning that an independent group similar to the 9/11 Commission should be formed to help rebuild the city. Morial is president of the National Urban League. He'll be speaking tomorrow night at the University of Illinois as part of its Martin Luther King commemoration. A church group is raising money to erect a Ten Commandments monument on the lawn of City Hall in Anderson, Indiana, now that the city council has given its blessing to the project. Lone Oak Wesleyan Church hopes to raise $12,000 for the granite marker. Similar displays have been challenged in court on the grounds that they amount to government endorsement of a religion. Church members say they'll pay the city's legal fees if it is sued over the display. Indianapolis-based health insurer WellPoint is reporting a big gain in fourth-quarter profits. WellPoint became the nation's largest health insurer following the 2004 merger of Anthem and WellPoint Health Networks. WellPoint says it plans to continue to expand its business. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. You're listening to the Information Advantage. This is WILL Urbana. Wednesday afternoon, we're joined by Drew Lerner, the senior agricultural meteorologist at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Hi, Drew. Tell me about those southwestern areas, how much rainfall the wheat may have gotten in this nation, in Texas, Oklahoma, parts of Kansas.
Well, so far, not much of anything has occurred out there. It's been very dry for a long period of time, and there's not much moisture in the pipeline, but there is a little disturbance that the computer models, continue to play around with here for this weekend, a storm system that is expected to come out of New Mexico and southwest Texas. Perhaps as we go through Thursday and into Friday, we'll try to generate some shower activity, but almost all the precipitation will stay to the southeast of major hard red wheat producing areas. Now, some areas in central Texas, up into the southeast half of Oklahoma, could end up picking up a quarter of an inch, maybe a localized half inch amount of moisture. But that is going to be on the southeast fringe of the main crop area only, and the majority of the region will go either without precipitation completely or will get darn little. So not very good news on that first system. We are looking at a cooling trend in the second week of the two-week outlook, and that cooling trend will generate some snowfall, probably the 3rd and 4th of February, and maybe another shot sometime around the 7th or 8th will occur across some of the plains. The snow will be, of course, very helpful to protect the crop as temperatures turn cooler, but the moisture content in that snow is going to stay quite low, and we're certainly not looking at any opportunity here for a meaningful change in the dry bias there.
And then here in the Midwest, it looks like skies will be clear and cooler than we've had for quite some time, a lot more like winter than it has been so far.
Yeah, and we're going to trend even more in that direction as we go into the second week of the two-week forecast. We've got about 5 days ahead of us here where conditions will be a little bit more like they've been here recently. But after that, I think we'll shift gears and bring a lot cooler air into the region and maybe see a couple of snow events of significance coming across the region. The first storm that does affect the Midwest is still slated to come out this weekend, probably begin in Missouri on Saturday, and will very quickly advance across the entire eastern Corn Belt, and probably reaching as far north as Wisconsin and Michigan, as far east, of course, as the Atlantic coast. We'll end up picking up probably 2/10 to 8/10 of an inch of moisture from that storm system, and probably a few spots from Kentucky southward, probably with more than an inch of moisture. And there'll probably be a good band of snow, kind of similar to what occurred last weekend, coming out across northern Missouri and parts of Iowa into Michigan. So the Chicago area may get a fairly good amount of snowfall again out of this system coming up.
Out of time, crops in South America okay at this point, and then very quickly really cold, I think, in parts of the former Soviet Union.
Yeah, the bitter cold over there is just absolutely phenomenal, only because it's the coldest since 1978, and it has persisted for 10 full days. Temperatures in the range of minus 10 to minus 40 degrees every day. It's very impressive. The cold air is headed across northern China for next week and will eventually end up in the western Pacific, and will build a high-pressure ridge over the eastern Pacific and set the stage for us to turn a lot cooler as we get closer to the second week of February. So a chain reaction that's going to change our weather towards a colder bias for a while.
Drew, thanks much.
Have a good day.
Drew Lerner with World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a great afternoon.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM, helping to create a storehouse of possibilities and products from a single seed. ADM, resourceful by nature.